Welcome to the Bike Talk with Dave podcast. I'm your host, Dave Mabel. Thanks for tuning in to episode number 152. And hey, if you have any suggestions for guests or topics, I'd love to hear them. Just shoot me a DM on my Bike Talk with Dave Instagram account, and I'll see what I can do. I did get a great suggestion from my last episode, so I want to thank Daryl for his great ideas, and I will be working on getting his suggestions on. This week's guest is an old friend of mine, Vance Fletcher. He started racing when he was in his teens, and I kind of helped nudge him along and helped him progress. Ironically, I pushed him into joining our Tuesday night World Championships training ride when he was 15 or 16. He did great. Now, many years later, I actually struggle to make it out of town with the group. It's either that fast or I'm that slow. Anyway, last summer I did actually manage to position myself correctly, turn myself inside out, and hang on through the first stop sign. But I was promptly dropped after that, thanks to Vance's efforts at the front. He's come a long way in the past 15 years. Over those 15 years, he's really made cycling an integral part of his life. He raced in college, he rode for an elite continental team at one point, and he now races at the front of our local race scene. I also love his enthusiasm as he's taken on the role of race director. For a couple of years now, hosting a cyclocross race, the Back Loop Cross, and he's now offering a fun, multi-surface, kind of gravel ride this summer. It's called the Outland, and we're going to talk a bit about that. But what I'm really excited about is his new job with USA Cycling. He's the Central U.S. Regional Director, and he covers 17 states, and if you put a race on in those 17 states, call Vance if you need some help. When he landed this gig recently, I had to invite him out to coffee with my Mr. Microphone, and now I'm inviting you into this conversation. Of course, this was a live recording, and I just can't seem to pull that off without some sort of weird technical hiccup, which you'll see. But we did manage to get the most out of our conversation and get it on tape. So, without further ado, I'd love to introduce you to the new USA Cycling Central Regional Director, super fast bike racer guy, race director, and a nice guy, Vance Fletcher. Hey, Vance, welcome to Bike Talk with Dave. It's about dang time. You're wearing the hat. I love it. You've been a fan for a long time.
Yeah. No, I'm really excited to be on. You've had so many people that have been amazing to listen to, and I've been loving the podcast, so it's great to be here.
You're very kind, and you've always been good about recommending people. Still got to get Dizzy Dillman on. In fact, he and Chase Warwick just, I don't know, inked a new deal together, which is kind of
lunchbox
fun.
Lunchbox racing. You heard about that?
I'm excited to hear about that.
Yeah, it's going to be cool.
Yeah, for sure. Think we'll see the two of them at Core 4 again?
I believe so.
They made an exciting race last year.
Yeah. And I think they might be bringing friends this year, so I think Core 4 is going to be fast. It's going to be cool.
It's becoming a thing, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Well, you're here because you... I actually just heard about your new idea, your new venture, your new thing, and, you know, I two new things. I wrote you a note in January, I think, saying, like, I guess it's still January, but, like, I'm so excited that guys like you, can I ask how old you are? You're not a...
No, I'm 31.
31, like, you're 31 and you're taking the reins.
Yep.
And I love that. And cycling needs that. Like, there's old guys like me, Sumter, Dags. We're all in our 50s, 60s, and been doing stuff a long time, putting on races, teams, training events, coaching,
training rides, all that stuff for 100 years, doing the, I mean, you even know what it's like to do the clothing ordering for a team.
Yeah. And it's it's complicated.
Rocket science.
Yeah,
it's super complicated. It's super hard. And so to have guys like you, like, take the reins at 31 is great for the sport, rather than just having a bunch of old guys still do it and get tired and go through the motions. Somebody with enthusiasm and energy and creative ideas coming to the table is awesome. So great moment to sit down and have a chat about all the new stuff you got going on, and some of the old stuff too, because you've been doing stuff for a little bit, which is super cool. Vance, we've known each other a long time. You're 31. We've probably known each other 15, 16 years.
Yeah, longer than I've known my wife.
Sorry, Courtney.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, no, I mean, right when I started racing as a junior, about 16 years.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah.
And you were good from the beginning. Why did you get interested in racing? Like, you're from a small town in southeast Iowa, which we're going to talk about in a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah,
like,
why?
Small towns in Iowa, you wrestle and you play football.
I was the only guy in town that was wearing Lycra, you know.
For sure.
I couldn't do any group rides. There's nobody else to go hang out with. It was driving to Des Moines an hour to go find people that liked riding bikes.
What sparked your interest?
But it was my parents, which most junior cyclists, it seems like their parents bring them into the sport. Because like you said, you know, cycling is kind of this sport where there's an older generation from the Lance Armstrong era or even before that. But other than that, a lot of younger people they're just not aware of the sport. So my parents love Lance Armstrong, and they actually went over and watched him win his 7th tour, supposed to be his last one. And they did a tour where they were kind of bussed around from stage to stage, and they met a friend, and they would go ride during the days, and they rode with Kevin. So Kevin came back and did Ragbri, and my parents were training a lot for this tour. So I said, hey, I want to get a bike. I want to do Ragbri with you when you guys come back. So I thought I was a stud. I'd go out and drop him on the hills, thought I was really fast. Show up to Ragbri, and Kevin was definitely faster than what my parents were. So me and him spent almost every day riding, and the fast pace lines would go by. We'd jump on the back, and I'd spin until I'd blow up out the back, and then Kevin would fall back with me and hang out. And by the end of the week, he was saying that I need to get on a bike racing team.
Oh, wow.
And I looked at him, I'm like, bike racing? We're in Iowa. There's no bike racing here. What are you talking about? And then we looked into it, and that's how I found DMOS.
Huh.
And at that time, you know, DMOS was kind of the go-to. If you're a Cat 5 beginner, they brought in all these people and really showed them the ropes, get them how to train. We did all these group rides. We'd go out and practice echelons. We'd do those crit practices. And there was a broad range of skills, from beginners to people that had been doing it for a long time. Dave Hammer, Dave Mertz, these guys that are,
Dave Ertl,
yeah.
Jeff Mertz.
Yeah, Jeff Mertz was, riding with me. So I learned a lot from him, and then it just kind of went from there.
Yeah, I remember getting you onto the Tuesday Night Ride World Championships when you were, 16, 17 maybe?
Yeah, I'd probably been doing it for a year or two at that point. So I think it was, 17.
Yeah.
That was the first time I started doing it. That was an eye-opener.
For sure. That was a different level than,
Yeah, it was a big step up. It was a good year or two of getting blown out the back every single ride. You kind of find the same people you get dropped with at the same time, and you'd struggle back in together. And then it was fun, though, because each year I'd see that progress where I'd make it a little bit longer, then I'm finishing with them, then I'm in the breakaway, so.
You are. Can I tell a story?
Yeah.
My goal on Tuesday night, and I'm old now and whatever, has been to make it to Casey's on the way out of Ankeny.
Okay, yep.
And I remember I made it, I don't know if this was last summer or the summer before, but I made it past Casey's, I made it to the first stop sign north of Ankeny, and I was stoked about that. My eyeballs were bleeding, and I mean, my heart rate was probably twice my...
You just maxed out.
Maxed out, yeah. And you go maybe a quarter to a half a mile flat after that stop sign, And then it just rises. It's just a little rise.
Kicker, yeah.
Just a little kicker. And I'm always happy to make it over that. And holy moly, like the pace just picked up to Mach 7 coming up to that kicker. And I got dropped off the back of that kicker faster than you can drop a brick off a bridge. And I remember talking to you a week or two later. I was like, dude, man, I made it to the stop sign. I was so excited. And then it just exploded. And you're like, yeah, that was me. I decided to put a little fire in the thing. And I was like, that was you? Come on, man.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
So you've evolved from, yeah, hanging on for dear life and making your way back and going a little further to, we've kind of switched places.
Yeah.
I used to be sitting in the front. And
you used to be me up.
Right, that's right. So,
full circle.
Kind of funny. But then you raced in college. Tell me about that.
Yeah, so I guess from DMOS, I made my way onto IS Corps. And then that's kind of where it really, I got more serious. So then from there, I was looking at collegiate racing, which is kind of this weird thing in the cycling world that a lot of people don't even know exist. But there's about a dozen schools that have varsity programs. And I ended up at Marion University in Indianapolis. Went there as kind of a roadie with a little bit of cyclocross and left having raced on the velodrome, picked up mountain biking while I was there. I really fell in love with cyclocross and then kept riding road too. So, I mean, it was a little bit of everything.
Yeah, that's one of the beauties of collegiate is they throw you in everything.
Yeah.
Like I remember Brody going off to college and Brody Burnham. And like the first thing they did was throw him on the track.
Yeah, you get there at the beginning, and track nats is like in a month. And
right.
They're like, all right, we're going straight to the velodrome. You're going to ride as hard as you can, and then you're going to go do nats. And if you're somebody that's never been on it, it's a lot of learning.
Learn to not coast.
Yeah, figuring out those gear ratios and, you know, kind of how to judge those efforts. And Brody's such a good sprinter. I mean, it's right up his alley.
Yeah. Been kind of fun watching him, but again, that's the beauty of collegiate is, like, it introduces you to everything. And Marion is one of the top schools in the nation. And it's considered a varsity sport.
Yep.
But not NCAA.
Correct. So with collegiate cycling, it's kind of its own entity. So it's ran through USA Cycling. So it doesn't have anything to do with the NCAA or, you know, D1, D2, anything like that. Which is unique because you can have professionals racing at college. So I was lucky enough, I was racing with Corinne Lebecki and then a couple others that were just studs. But they would go race in Europe, and they were doing world championships, and they were doing world cups and things like that. And then they'd show up to the collegiate scene and just beat everybody up.
For sure. That's awesome. Well, it laid a good groundwork. And then, I don't know, you met Courtney and... am I getting picked up here? Hello? I am not.
It's not showing anything on there.
This thing keeps dying.
Oh, bummer.
Hang on.
Yeah. So, Vance, you, let's try this the fourth time.
Yeah, we got it.
We got it this time. Take four. So, graduated college, got married, got a job. Picked up golf. Maybe you always golfed. I don't know, but I certainly see your Instagram. You golf now and again, which is horrible for cycling. Time, money, suck. Fishing. Fishing's fine, but it is a time suck. But you're back. I feel like you're back. You maybe took a little time off. What was post-collegiate riding like for you? Where'd you come from and what brought you back?
Yeah, so I think kind of post-collegiate for a lot of people, they struggle finding that balance between life and riding bikes. And once they kind of get hobbies and a job and a life, they spend less time on the bicycle. It's just kind of how it goes. And for a lot of people, it's frustrating because they can never be as fast as they used to be. In college, I was never the fastest guy, so I tried not taking myself too serious. So when when I came back into it, I was really just doing it for fun, you know. No expectations. I knew I could be up there, but at the end of the day, like, I'm still going to go out fishing. I'm still going to go golfing. I'm not going to be on my bike 20 hours a week. And luckily, I can be pretty quick with low mileage. You know, I can ride 5-6 hours a week and still compete, which is lucky. Now with this longer distance gravel stuff, it's a different story. You know, I got to put the miles in like everybody else does. But when it comes to cyclocross, you know, 1 hour race, that's kind of my bread and butter. I love it. But it's been tricky, but I've always tried to keep that balance of making bike riding still fun. And that's where the Iowa scene's really, it's fun to be here. I was in Indianapolis a couple years after I graduated. So we came back right before COVID, and it was one of those, holy cow, there's a group ride every single night. There's either a race on the weekend or there's some organized, let's go ride 50 miles of some silly trail and loops, and you know. So it almost came to a point where, man, if I want to be fast, I can't do it. All of these, you know, fun rides, you got to have some structure. So I work with Drew Dillman with Ignition Coaching, so shout out to them. So Drew kind of, he makes my training plans, and it's, you know, I've really kind of found that balance between getting those long rides on the weekend, but maybe one day of structure, and then kind of filling in the other times with those fun rides, the social sides. And he knows that. He makes comments on my stuff where he's like, really, you should be doing more structure. You should really be riding harder. But I know you like doing the fun stuff, so go out and do a group ride. Go out and do this. Go do Tuesday nights. And we just kind of work around that. So that's what's kept me into it and kind of kept me fast is just the love of cycling and the community.
I love that you said, like, the fun brought you back, and you is a different attitude.
Yeah.
Which, for the 99% of us, like, that's why we're there. It's certainly not the money.
You know, 100%. There's not many people that are making a living off bike racing.
Correct.
It's all about the fun. You know, the second it's not fun for me anymore, I probably won't be riding my bike as much. And that's where all these other hobbies come into play. It's finding that free time to, if I don't feel like jumping on a bike, I don't have to. So
yeah, that's a great attitude. That being said, one thing that changed in January, and I assume you're getting paid, is you're getting paid not to ride your bike, but to promote bikes? I don't know, what do you do? You're working for the USAC now. What do you do? What's your scoop?
Yeah, so I'm with USA Cycling. I'm really excited about it because it's something, you know, a lot of people have jobs, but a lot of people have jobs that they're really passionate about. So this is me taking a step in that direction. So I'm now the regional manager, so I oversee the central region. They do an east, a central, and a west. So within the central here, I oversee 17 states. Wow. And I'm working with pretty much any of the race directors that need help with permitting or just have questions or just anything USA Cycling related. I'm working with them, working with clubs, and then working with the LAs or the local associations. So like IBRA here in Iowa, the Iowa Bicycle Racing Association, which I feel like my background has been really good for this. I started doing a couple of my own races, doing some race directing the last couple of years. I've sat on the IBRA board for last year would have been my second year doing it. I was actually the vice president with plans of taking over as president this year. Conflict of interest, so I had to step down from that. But it's just kind of a little bit of the best of everything, I guess. And now I get to ride bikes, I get to talk about bikes, I get paid to worry about bike races and helping people out that want to host great events and amazing races and rides.
Huh, that's awesome. 17 states. Holy moly, that's huge.
Yeah. So I'm pretty much from the Dakotas as far east as Tennessee, and then I go all the way down to, like, Louisiana, Mississippi.
That's a big deal, man. Texas? Is Texas in there?
Not right now. It's part of the West.
Yeah, all right, so cool.
Eventually it might kind of wrap into my territory, but not right now.
Fair enough. I don't know. You've been here in it a month. What are your observations about USAC, about races, racing? Like, what do you hear regionally that we may not hear in our little bubble in Des Moines, Iowa?
I mean, yeah, it's been less than a month, so I'm still figuring out the role as I go. But I've already been working with quite a few race directors that have some larger series, and they're already planning out their whole year. Sure. They're permitting. They might have 11 races or something spread out. So those are really the people I've been working with so far. But it doesn't seem like it's too different than what it is locally in Iowa. I mean, we do have a great scene here where we have a lot of road racing, we have a lot of cyclocross, we have gravel, which is kind of that weird side where USA Cycling hasn't dipped their toes in too much yet. So, of course, that's something that they've been talking about. But, you know, learning a little bit more about USA Cycling is definitely interesting. I know to some people it's kind of got a bad name. They just assume they want them to get their money and then that's about it. You know, buy your license, all that fun stuff. But they really do care a lot, and they're doing everything they can. And of course, no company's perfect, so it's always evolving and changing to better suit the racers and the riders, and even just the race directors. But I don't know. I guess I don't know. I'm still figuring it out.
Right.
Yeah. You have to have gone into this with opinions about building the sport, continuing to build the sport, and helping it evolve. And I know, I don't know, gravel's the thing, right? Gravel's the hot new topic. Yeah. But, I mean, road racing is interesting, fun. Cyclocross is awesome. But it feels like those have declined over the past few years as far as participation, as far as number of races. What's your feeling on both of those things and where they fit with the evolution of the sport in the U.S.? I mean, if I have to qualify this, like, if you look at the road, like, we've got some freaking great cyclists riding overseas. But what about the development line for kids? Kids like you need clubs like Demos was to help them learn and grow and get faster and better. Like, where do you see where we are now and where we're headed as far as cycling goes, specifically road and cross? How's that for your first month? But I know you've been in it a long time.
No, I have. Yeah, it's been kind of sad. You know, when I was racing in college, 2012, 2013, that was kind of the peak, especially for cyclocross. I mean, you show up to races and it was 100 guys in the Cat 3s or more. The UCI races had 70, 80, 100 guys racing too. And we just don't see that anymore. You know, Iowa's kind of unique where we're actually kind of having a resurgence, it seems like, in the last couple of years. It's almost hard to put a race on because there's no free weekends.
Correct.
But that's not, you know, the same across the board. And I don't really know what that is. I was hoping that there was going to be a bigger influx of racers after COVID hit. I mean, everybody got on bicycles. The trails around here were packed. And I was kind of like licking my lips. I'm like, man, give it 2-3 years, we're gonna have all these people that we're gonna find in the racing scene that are like, I started riding bikes during COVID and then I wanted to be competitive. But we're not seeing that, and I think it's just because cycling in the U.S. is such a niche thing that a lot of people like me back in the day just didn't know it existed. Mm-hmm. And if it does exist, it's not the easiest sport to do. You know, it can be intimidating, especially road racing. You know, you're rolling 30 miles an hour down the road, bumping shoulders with people. If you do crash, I've seen crashes where people get up and then they sell their bike and never race again. So it takes kind of a unique person that wants to do that. It does seem like there's more people that want to come back to road racing, though. Gravel is really, really big, but also it's hard. You can only do so many 100-plus mile races a year. So I think I'm starting to see more people that want to pick up road racing and not focus so much on gravel, but gravel's still something that you can't not look at. I mean, it's so big. A lot of it's stuff that's obviously not sanctioned through USA Cycling, so it's pulling riders in different directions. So it's kind of unique where there's not this unifying thing here where everybody's got one focus. So as far as like identifying talent and everything, USA Cycling does what they can, and they have a whole pipeline. I mean, that's kind of one of their big focuses is Olympic medals, and you do that by finding, you know, these juniors and investing a lot of time and energy into them to make sure that they have everything they need to make it up through the U23 into that elite. which you look at the Olympics, we had a great Olympics, lots of medals. I mean, especially road racing, you know,
right.
That was amazing. But even mountain bike, everything else. So, yeah.
Sweet. Yeah. Well, I know beyond your role at USAC, you put on a couple of races. You've done back loop cross 2 years now? Three?
Yeah, two years.
2 years? Yep. What's back loop cross? Like, what is it and what's your goal?
So the first year, it kind of started selfishly. We had a couple week break in November before our state championships, and I didn't want to go 4 weeks and not have a race, not to have anything to train for. I like racing. I don't like training. So that time of year, once it gets dark and cold, the miles and my effort really go down. So I need something to kind of keep me motivated. So I wanted to throw something together locally. People just aren't traveling as much as they used to. So I knew if we didn't have something close by, a lot of people would hang the bike up before state. And I heard a lot of that. I heard there were a lot of people that said, I wouldn't on state if you didn't have back loop cross. Oh, so wow. That was the first year, and it was just a one day, a Saturday. So then last year, I got it on the calendar earlier and got it bumped forward into October. And we did a Saturday, Sunday with it. Mm-hmm. One of the cool things about back loop cross is it's also the single speed state championships. The schedule, it was just too busy. There are normal state champs where they didn't have time for a single speed. So I asked for it and got permission. So that's always one of the best races, I think, to watch. The course is, it's at Waterworks Park. They kind of have the Kill Deer Loop over on the west side. So I call it back loop cross because of that. And it's pancake flat. It's a floodplain. There's a little bit of pavement. So I wanted a race that suited more kind of for the roadies and beginner people, where it's a little less intimidating. A lot of the courses we have around here are pretty hilly, and they can be hard. I mean, which is great for people that, you know, like me, that love racing technical, hard, you know, punchy courses. But I understand that's not, we need some variance in the course designs we have. So I set it up as a pretty fast course with a lot of pavement. I love watching on Europe when those guys hit the pavement and they're either strung out attacking each other in the cross race, or they're using it for recovery, and you had a group of people all looking at each other. Nobody wants to get on the front. It's kind of that cat mouse. Mm-hmm. And we saw that like quite a few of our races. The Cat 3s, the first year, I think, was one of the best races all year. It was five guys came down last half a lap. There were some team tactics happening. It ended up being a three-man sprint on the pavement to the line. So it was a lot of fun to watch. I'm hoping it just kind of keeps growing, gets bigger and better. I don't know. I don't need it to become a jingle cross or anything. There's only so much you can do out there.
I was wondering about that, what your vision was.
Yeah, so we're kind of in talks with Waterworks. We're just getting the ball rolling, but they came to us looking to add some bike trails, single track, mountain bike.
Oh, wow.
In that area back there.
Okay.
So
I'm in on that.
Yep. I got looped in on it, luckily, since I do the race out there. So we're hoping that maybe in the future the race can be a little more dynamic, add some cool features in there. So mm-hmm. It's not just, you know, wide open grassy turns and pavement. And get something fun, maybe a flyover.
Oh,
maybe.
There we go. Yeah.
I don't know. I'm trying to convince some people.
Right. Do a flyover the river. Yeah, like you're right kind of next to the river there. That'd be interesting.
Yeah.
Or through the river, run through it.
Yep. I've always had a dream of doing a triple flyover. I've been trying to convince people for a long time. You dig a little tunnel where it goes underneath, and then you got one at ground level, and then you got flyover over the top of it. You take photos. Imagine that photo. Three people on top of each other all ripping through that at the same time.
I'm in. Get her done.
Yeah.
Get her done.
See, that's big picture.
Yeah. I can see the flyover being the hill element of a Waterworks race.
Yeah, yeah. And it's just nice because it gives you a lot more options as far as setting up a course. You know, you can have it double back on itself and, you know,
yep.
You're not crisscrossing.
Yep. That's awesome.
Yeah.
So that is back loop cross. And I just got a message from, I'm on the Bike Iowa racing team, and is like been going around like, holy, there's a new race in Sheridan, like we all got to do this, like get on it. Tell me awesome. About your new adventure down in Sheridan.
Well, first off, thanks for whoever's plugging it, that's amazing. I actually, this is the perfect time to do this. I haven't announced it, it's all out there, it exists, but I haven't said anything about it. Been kind of low-key, still working out some of the details. But I grew up in, yeah, South Central Iowa, down in Sheraton, and the writing down there is pretty amazing, so I want to show it off. So this year, August 2nd, I'm going to have Outland Gravel, or you just call it Outland, whatever you want. But I kind of want to call it like an adventure gravel race. A lot of gravel is becoming so fast and people are so specific for it that it's almost becoming road racing. So I wanted something that's a little more grassroots, a little more fun, but also not just absolutely crazy distance where it's going to crack everybody and it's just that slow grind. So it's going to be 100K, and then also have a 50K option. Sorry, 60K option. 100K and a 60K. And
6 times 6 is 38 miles.
Yeah, so it ends up being, if mileage-wise, like 64 and 35.
Okay,
so the
cool.
two options. So it ends up being, it's a little, it's 103K, yeah, and then, right, and then right. it's 57K.
People
so.
Do, like, I put on a race called the 101, and people are like, it was 102 miles. I'm like, I know, but we had to put the finish line somewhere.
Yeah, yep, and that's kind of how it was, you know.
Yep.
But I think the fun part about it is it's going to have quite a few level Bs. I think we'll have or four level B roads. We'll have some four-wheeler trails. We'll have horse trails. We're going to roll right through Stevens State Forest.
Oh, wow.
Yep.
Cool.
So it's going to be really neat. We'll roll through my family farm. That'll be the first aid station, about mile 20. So we'll cut through the farm. We'll go through the field in the back. We'll actually, I don't know, we'll hop the fence or how we'll figure that out. But then we'll probably, there's a horse trail maybe 20 yards from the back of our farm that's Stevens State Forest. So that'll get us right into the thick of the woods. We'll take some gravel, level B. There's an old bridge out there that no longer, you can't get across it. It's about 20 foot above you, and there's no boards or anything on it. So there'll be a river foraging in there. Part of the reason I'm doing it in August, because I know people don't want wet feet when they're cold. So hopefully it's hot, so people actually like running through the river.
Is that the Sheridan River?
No. I don't know what river it is.
Fair enough.
It's a lot smaller than the Sheraton. I went through it like in April a couple years ago, and it was one of those, took my shoes and socks off, threw them to the other side, and pulled the shorts up and hiked through it, and it was fine. So
dig it.
By the summertime, it'll be really good. Water is probably going to be lower. And then the last 15 miles, instead of finishing with just the most brutal climbs like most races do, it's going to be rail trail.
Oh, sweet.
The oldest rail trail in Iowa.
Oh.
So about 15 miles of that, and it's mostly downhill heading back into town.
I love you.
Yeah, so it'll be nice, which I think the dynamics of the race could be fun too. If somebody gets away early where it's a lot hillier and more technical, that fast, like, you could haul. I mean, it's kind of double track at the beginning. It's the first like 6 or 7 miles, it's not maintained really well, so it's just kind of mowed grass. So still adventure-y. The canopy's all grown in. It's going to be like you're in a jungle. And then the last 7 miles or so is a cinder, so crushed cinder. And it's ripping if it's dry. Even when it's wet, it's pretty fast.
So what tires would you foresee being the winning tires?
Man, mountain bike tires. They're the new gravel tires, you know?
Yeah.
I just put 2.1s on my gravel bike.
Seriously?
They barely fit, and they are a lot of fun.
Fun, yes, but are they ripping on 7 miles of cinder flat to downhill?
I rode yesterday and averaged like 19 on those tires, and it was mostly pavement.
And what pressure?
Like, I think it was 19.
Wow, on 2.1s?
Yeah.
See, tires are so interesting, aren't they?
Yeah, they are. We're going to start going into the weeds with bike talk and or tire talk and rolling resistance, tire pressure, width, all that nonsense.
For sure. I grew up in the era when the first bald tires were, like, came to the market, 18 millimeters wide, 120 PSI, just brutal, beat you up, but they were so, quote-unquote, fast.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I was pretty old school until the last couple of years. I was anti-gravel bike, I was anti-big tires, you know, like, we just rode our cross bikes with 32s that hopefully were bald because you rode enough on them, so they rolled quick,
right,
you know?
Right. Yep.
But finally, this is the first year I got a gravel bike, and I have a specific bike set up just for gravel. Huh. I'm not going to be riding my cross bike with bigger tires. So I went from a max of 38C is what I've always had. So now I can claim it as 47 clearance, but I got 51s on it, so they're tight.
Can I ask what you got?
The Thunderbirds.
No, oh, the bike.
Yes, I got a Diverge.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so kind of something a little different, but I got a delete kit. So the shock that goes in the handlebar, you can take it out, and it's got like an insert that goes in. It saves like half a pound, and it drops the front end, so it's actually more aggressive than the Cruxes. So you kind of get all the benefits of a fast-feeling, aggressive bike, but then you still have like the internal frame storage, and there's more mounts and things like that. So
mounts for your bike packing?
Yeah. For rag ride.
For rag ride, perfect.
Yep.
Perfect.
I love it. So you kind of, and maybe I'm reading too much into this, but as I dove into your Outland,
yep.
Outland gravel, Outland adventure, Outland ride race, like you seem to have formed a whole entity around promoting Backloop and Outland. Like, what's the scoop with that? Why'd you do that? And I'm asking this not just for curiosity's sake, but like I feel like it's a good model for others to follow. I know I put on a hundred races over the course of my lifetime, and it is just Dave.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like I order the numbers and I go through the permitting process and I'd find someone to do all the corners, and I know you're doing all that, but it was just Dave. And I felt a little exposed. You know, I put on the 101, and some dude crashes in a corner. He's like, oh, I was going way too fast in that gravel corner and fell, freaking broke his scapula, and that's hard to break. And it's like, Gary is like putting it on Dave. So, like, what did you create? Why? And, like, what's your hope with it?
Yeah, so I feel like I'm getting far enough into it now with having two races, and, you know, Backloop Cross is getting a little bit bigger. So I just kind of wanted to separate that from, like you're saying, so it's not just Vance right. doing all of it. So I set up an LLC to run it through. It was just so that way I have somewhere to keep everything and to keep it more organized. And also just to protect myself. Insurance and everything else nowadays is getting so crazy, so it's just taking those couple extra steps to make sure that I'm covered if something was ever to happen, because at the end of the day I want to make sure that the racers and the riders of anything that I'm putting on are protected and they're taken care of, but then I also have to make sure that's, you know, the same way for myself as well. And you know, Courtney was obviously 100% backed by that. On the website, she's listed as the CEO. So
I was going to ask about that, if she was like took a position of leadership.
Yeah, she's been amazing. She helps me a ton at all these events. She's that right hand man. Anytime I'm second guessing something or thinking about it, you know, she's a good soundboard to bounce it off, and she'll tell me how it is, whether it's a stupid idea or okay, yeah, that does make some sense, you know.
That's awesome to have. Looking at it from the perspective of what you're doing with USAC now, did your involvement in USAC influence your decision to create Outland LLC? Like, is this something that's talked about at USAC? Like, I wish people would, like, form an entity and make it legit, or does USAC know or care how people's race directorship is organized?
Yeah. So, no, it definitely wasn't influenced or pushed by them. I had that taken care of before I started working for them. And you see a little bit of everything. There's race directors that are just associated with their club,
yep.
which is normal. And there's also kind of individual people, like what I was doing before. And from USA Cycling, it doesn't really matter because they're covered. If they need to for an event, they could always add on additional named insurers. It's pretty cheap. It's like $15 to get added to the COI, which, like, I've done that in the past, added extra people, or like Waterworks gets added on to that event. So that it didn't matter too much as far as that went, which is pretty easy. One of the big influences, like for the gravel race, it will be a USAC sanctioned gravel race, which is kind of unique. Because that's that weird, like, what does that mean kind of deal.
Yeah, I was going to ask, what does that mean?
So,
because others are, but you don't have to have a license. So I don't get it.
Yeah, so, and that's sometimes some of the gravel races are, and you don't even know that they are, right?
Right.
there's races like Iceman, you know, mountain bike race up there. That's a USA cycling event. And most people don't even know that it's a USA sanction. But the way USA Cycling looks at it is there's competitive events or races that includes like track cycling, road racing, mountain bike, and cyclocross. And then they have fun events, which is your Grand Fondos, your group rides, your training camps, and then gravel. So the reason you don't need a license or anything is because there's not a real reason to. There's no points. There's no upgrades. It's gravel is kind of a mass start deal. And all these other, it'd be another kind of barrier to entry too for a lot of people.
For sure. I've always said that about cycling.
Yep, yep.
That license is absolutely a barrier to entry.
No, it definitely is. And shout out, if you use the code INTRO, MEMB, M-E-M-B, 25, so any first-time license holders for USA Cycling, that'll drop your license to $50 for your first year.
Oh, awesome.
So, okay. Again, just, you know, hopefully it makes it a little bit easier for people to get into it. So, yeah, $50 instead of that. Is it $125 now, I think?
Something like that.
Something, yeah.
It's more than 35.
Yeah, it's more than 35.
That was history speaking.
But, yeah, so for my race, like, you won't need a USA Cycling license or anything. Essentially, it just means that I am backed by USA Cycling. I'll have USA Cycling insurance, which is, as far as bike racing goes, it's probably the best bike-specific insurance out there. Yeah. So just to make sure that I'm protected and all the riders are protected as well.
Very cool. I had a question in there.
What minute is this? I have to remember.
Minute 20.
25? Okay.
28. Was so important. USA license, licensing,
gravel road.
I don't know. Oh, I know what I was going to ask. So, no categories, no, it doesn't matter if you're cat 1, 2, 3, 4, or 5, if you're junior, if you're senior, if you're whatever, in a gravel race, except for some big races like Gravel Worlds or Unbound, where they have separate starts for the elite. How does that work, and how do you gain that start line? Because it's not like, oh, the Cat 1s are starting at 1, you know, like in a road race. But I don't... Could I just sign up for the elite race in Gravel Worlds and show up at 10 minutes early?
Yeah, you probably, I mean, it depends on the race. But yeah, a lot of it's kind of self-selected. I mean, do you want to go ride with the 50, 60 other guys that might drop
I do not. I do not,
know? No. So most of the time the people know, like, all right, I can keep up with them. I'll go ride with the fast guys. Or they know, like, that would be a miserable day. I'll go do the regular ride with everybody else. Yeah, a lot of it's self-selected. I don't know. I think some of them kind of have a process where maybe you have to prove, you know, that you've had some results or that you're capable of, you know, riding at that level. But for the most part, like, I was looking at Mid-South. I almost signed up in the pro category and was like, nah, I don't want to do that.
So Mid-South, could you win the amateur category? And what's that do for you?
No, I can't win it. And it could get you looked at for getting on a pro team. I mean, that's the way a lot of people are looking at it. There's some really, really fast guys in Iowa that go do, you know, Unbound, and they go to Gravel Worlds, and they're looking for those results in the amateurs. So hopefully they can get picked up for a bigger pro contract. Because, you know, finishing 20th, 30th in the pros, and like, somebody might notice you, but maybe not. Where if you go win the amateurs, you know, hey, maybe there's some potential. We can help this guy get to that, you know, top five in the pro race.
Interesting. You say get picked up on a pro contract, pro this, pro that. Gravel is evolving so much, and I didn't really mean to go down this road today, but we kind of brought it up. Drew and Chase have Lunchbox Racing. Yeah. It's their own gig. Like, couldn't you just do that?
I know Zimmer retired from pro road racing with Project Echelon. I know he's still involved with Project Echelon in some way. I don't know what it is, but couldn't he go just find sponsors? Like, how's it work in the gravel world? I know it's different than getting picked up by Jumbo Visma.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's, I mean, a lot of these people that are successful at setting up programs like that come from a pro background, kind of like Zimmer, because they have the connections. Mm-hmm. So it's a lot easier for them to reach out to their friends or their buddies that already have connections with the, you know, whatever sponsors that they had before. And it's obviously easy to show that, hey, I am fast. You know, I was on a pro team. But it is unique, and you kind of see it within Cyclocross too, where a lot of people are setting up their own programs. I mean,
Caleb Schwartz.
Exactly. That's what I was going to say. Caleb's the kind of guy where he'll get it done. You know, he will hit people up. He is a hard worker, and he makes it happen. Mm-hmm. So it really depends on the people themselves, like how much effort do they want to put into it as a pro. Some people just don't want the headache of having to do the logistics, of having to go knock on doors to get sponsorships, of... You know, there's a lot going on if you do it yourself, where some of these programs where there's already a team set up, hey, if I'm good enough, I can get on the team. But there's only so many spots, and it's pretty limited. Mm-hmm. So unless you are one of those, the fastest few, you do kind of got to set it up yourself. So that's, we recently did Easttown Racing here in Des Moines, and that really was just kind of a group of guys that wanted to get together, kind of to honor Tad, Tad Costello. He had an auto body shop in town and unfortunately passed away way too soon. So we wanted a way to kind of keep his memory. So Rad Tad and Easttown Racing. So it's been a lot of fun. But we haven't really looked for sponsors or anything because it's that hard, like, what value do you bring? You know?
Right.
And just slapping somebody's name on my jersey and telling them to give me money is hard. It's a hard ask. So we're just kind of doing it ourselves, keeping it small, low-key, making that next step up. It's a lot of work.
Yeah,
so the gravel scene, it's hard.
I talked to Caleb, and I was like, dude, that's like managing, quote-unquote, your team, your project is a full-time job, mm-hmm. and bike racing is kind of the side gig.
Yeah.
Like you've got your master's in business, MBA, your master's in business administration. My question, if you were 15 again and looking at the world of cycling and you look at guys like Drew and Chase, you look at Sepp Kuss, you look at Christopher Blevins, Cole Patton, you look at some of the folks at the top of the sport and you think... I mean, in your day, your parents went to the Tour de France and they watched Lance Armstrong and you said, that's what I want to do. What does a 15-year-old kid, quote unquote, want to do today? And what would be a good avenue for somebody who's going to go up through the ranks and earn a living on a bike in this part of the world?
Yeah, I think especially if you're younger, it'd be really hard to do it in the gravel scene. Just to go make it work for now. I think starting on the road would probably be your best bet.
Really, still?
I think so. I mean, if you're looking for larger teams with bigger, you know, more funding and more potential to get you to those big races without having to spend that money yourself, I mean, unless you want to go ahead and just fund yourself, which is hard to do because mm-hmm. cycling is not cheap. You know, the travel and the race entries and stuff. I don't know. But gravel is starting to evolve that way. I mean, Lifetime this year has got a U23 division. Mm-hmm. They're just starting out with that. But also, like, juniors tend not to be as good at riding 200 miles. You know,
true.
There's a lot to figure out with that between, you know, did I ride too hard? Am I eating enough? You know, like, you probably don't have 5-10 years of riding in your legs yet. So it's a little trickier, but there's those freaks that show up and just crush it, you know, make you look pathetic.
right.
But yeah, I think if I was 15, I personally would still go the road route. I probably would focus a little bit more on cyclocross. But I know if you're big, you'll get picked up early, but obviously I was never going to be fast enough to go pro. So again, I'm more doing it for the love of it. So yes. I'd be focusing on what I like to do.
What about cross? Curtis White just retired. In my world, he's kind of, I mean, Bruner and Funston, I don't know, there's a handful of guys still racing cross on an international level. I don't know, but it's not what it was in 2013, 2014, 2015. Would you point somebody that direction?
You really got to make that decision. I mean, if you want to go all in on road, it's hard to also race cross. You need an off season, you need a break. And some people, I feel like that's one of the fastest ways they burn out, is they just jump from one discipline to another and then they don't really take that downtime. And it's easy to do that for a couple years, but it's just not sustainable long term. But I mean, if you love cyclocross, I'd say do it. Go all in. Race cyclocross. I mean, there's programs like Midwest Evo if you're a junior. I mean, those kids they're ripping. It's a great program. I saw it when I was in Indianapolis. They started and it was maybe 10, 15 kids. Now they're up to, I don't know, 70, 80. And they've had multiple, you know, national champions. They've sent tons of kids over to Europe to race. So there's still that option. Like, stuff's out there.
Yeah. Could somebody make a living in cross?
No. Okay. I mean, you know, it's like any discipline. Like, same thing as gravel. There's not a lot of guys making a living in gravel. Right. There's not a lot of guys in road making a living. It's cycling's not a sport that gets paid for, especially for the time and effort you have to put into it. It just doesn't. There's not the revenue as there is for baseball or for football or things like that, which is tricky because you're doing it more for the passion. I would say in any of those disciplines, like, you can make it work. It's just, it's going to be hard.
Yeah. So that kind of circles back to why you picked up racing again, for the fun.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, because of rag ride, right?
That's
it's
right.
For fun.
100%, 100%. Yeah. Okay, let's, Outland?
Yep.
Adventure Race, August 2nd, and people can sign up yet?
Yeah, it's already live on Bike Reg. Registration right now is only $30. Wow. And I think I have it set up where you can get refunded up to 2 weeks or something. So I'd say go ahead 2 weeks out before the race.
Seriously?
Know. Yeah. You know.
So no risk?
Yeah, exactly. Sign up now. I will be bumping the price up eventually. I don't know how much. I don't know when. So I figured if somebody wants to register this far out, they deserve to get a cheap entry. So $30. It's on Bike Reg. You can just look for Outland. It should just pop right up. Also, it's on Instagram. It's just Outland Gravel, mm-hmm. So real simple. And then I also have a website out there. It's also outlandgravel.com, but there's no vowels in gravels. It's GRVL.
Okay.
You know, it's a little more hip.
So hip.
Also, I found out after I already set up the Instagram account that Outland Gravel, the website was taken.
Oh, no way.
Yeah, no, everything else is open and free except the website. It was some gravel company in Florida.
Well, when I started this little podcast, Bike Talk was already taken, so it became Bike Talk with Dave, so I get it.
Yeah, you know, you got to pivot sometimes.
Yeah. Do you have a date for Back Loop? You are the regional director. Do you have a date for Back Loop?
I do. Yeah, I do. It's on the IBRA calendar.
Oh, okay.
I don't remember what it was. I think it's like
fair enough.
The second week of October or something.
It's in October. We've got a couple of weeks to figure that out.
Focus on summer. We got spring, summer. We got all kinds of, you know, cross is coming. It's just, you got to give some time.
Right. So people can go to, obviously, and I got to plug this, my team, bikeiowa.com, and your complete cycling calendar, including cyclocross, which will be in the fall, and Backloop Cross will be in there somewhere. Yep. Single speed state championships again?
I believe so. Yep. I mean, unless something changes, it should be.
You should talk to the regional USAC director about that.
Yeah, you think I could, you maybe leverage something?
Maybe. To call Courtney when you get home.
Yeah.
All right, dude, thanks tons. Thanks for all you're doing. I hope you enjoy it. And I think you're a great role model for others who are passionate about the sport, want to see it continue, want to see it grow, and enjoy watching people succeed, which I think this is kind of all about, having fun and seeing people compete and be their best.
Yeah, no, I appreciate all the kind words. That's amazing. Yeah. But thank you for being the voice and getting it out there. And you've been a big pillar of the community for years. So everything that you've done, well, you know, it goes both ways. So I'm just, at this point, I'm ready to kind of step up and do more.
Here's the reins, dude. Go.
Thank you.
Ah, pillar of the community. You're so nice. Thank you, Vance. Thanks for coming on. I'm so excited that you are taking the reins and that so many more people like you are taking the reins and helping the sport of cycling get back on its feet and do some growing. Road racing is awesome. Crits are awesome. Cross is awesome. Mountain biking is awesome. And of course, gravel is awesome. And we all seem to know that gravel is awesome because we all love doing gravel. But I will support your efforts in helping rebuild on the road. Well, thanks again for tuning in today. And next up, we've got a couple of alumni of the show, Justin McQuarrie and Chris Millman. We're getting together to talk about all the fun we're going to have later this month at the Rattlesnake Gravel Grind in Sweetwater, Texas. But we're going to dig a little deeper than all the fun and talk about how we can all prepare to perform our best at a long gravel event. The training, the nutrition, and even the equipment. So be sure and tune in, and you can subscribe so you will never miss an episode. I'd also love it if you'd rate and review on your favorite podcast platform and help the show grow. And of course, if you want to support the show financially, feel free to drop some coins in the cup at buymeacoffee.com and give the show a follow on Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. And of course, if you're trying to tune in on your computer, it's as easy as going to biketalk.bike, and every episode is there and easily streamable. Now, I hope you have a great week. Keep riding, and remember that nothing compares to the simple pleasure of riding a bicycle.